Radio Podcast. My name is Sean Patrick Flannery, and I hope you dig the podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, and it is Friday the 13th.
Whoa. Yes.
Wow. I mean, you know, I don't really, do you have a stigma about it? I really don't. To me, it's just a day, you know.
Not really. It may be one of those things where if something, you know, fucked up happens, you know, you stub your toe, you're like, well, it's Friday the 13th. Right. So, you know, unlucky shit happens, you know, kind of make a tongue in cheek kind of joke.
Yeah. I'm not an overly superstitious guy. Like I might at times, like when the Astros are doing well in the playoffs, I might like, okay, I'm not going to change this shirt. I'm going to wear the same Astros shirt tomorrow. But then if they lose, I'm like, okay, it didn't really work. You know, that's about as far as I go. I'm not really, I don't have to have my water cup in the same spot on my desk or things like that. I'm not really, you know, but some people are. Some people really buy into Friday the 13th and they believe it's superstitious. They'll go as far as calling into work. They won't go anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some people that really buy into it. And to me, it's like, yeah, it's just a day.
Triscuit epiphobia and fear of the number 13.
And, it has spawned a very popular franchise of films that seems to be in rights hell now, as far as whether there's ever going to be another one.
Yeah.
Just seem to be having issues with that as who actually owns the rights to the franchise and whether it'll ever be another film in that series. I do think that the success of the Halloween reboot the last 4 or 5 years with its little trilogy has maybe paved the way for some of these other slashers to make comebacks. You know, I know New Line has been highly talking about another for Nightmare on Elm Street and perhaps they'll figure out the rights for Jason Voorhees and they'll reboot Friday the 13th in some way again. I'm sure like just like in the movies, Jason never really died. I'm sure the franchise will be back in some way, you know?
Yeah. You do it like a James Bond kind of thing, you know?
So we'll see. How are you, Matt? Doing well?
Yeah. You know, it's been a pretty quiet week. Nothing crazy going on. It's been pretty chill. Yeah. Got no complaints. Everything's cool, man.
Matt is, you're wearing this very flashy, like Hawaiian style shirt. And it's like, I don't know. I just took a picture of you wearing it. I'm going to put it on Instagram for people to see because it's like, what the hell is he fucking wearing?
Yeah, man. You know, whenever you're just kind of lounging around, sometimes you wear these, you may wear some, you know, a leisure shirt. I guess this is kind of like a leisure shirt, you know, you got some flowers on it, you know, some rifles, you know. It goes with, it could go with the movie. It's like a Hawaiian shirt that Arnold would wear, you know?
It feels like something Arnold, what does Arnold have to do with this movie?
He doesn't, but he should, you know, because he feels could. Like
Frank Abagnale, or how do you, man, same so hard to fucking say.
Frank Abagnale.
He would probably wear something like
that. The Great Forger. Yeah. You'll never catch me, Tom Hanks, you bastard. Man, in a world, everyone wants to catch him. He'll never catch me. I don't know.
Sure, man. Why not?
I
think if he was in the role of, I could see him playing more of the role of Tom Hanks played in the movie, though.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. If they casted Arnold, yeah.
Oh man!
Damn it! He outsmarted me again. What the fuck?
But man, we got an Arnold movie coming up in a few weeks, though, so
we do. We do. And, we're definitely going to get to talk about the Governator soon.
The Governator. I've been all right too, man. It's been just pretty pedestrian, normal week, I guess. You know, kids had no school today. What the hell, man? In our district, they went for they had 2 weeks off to go for 8 days to get a 4 day weekend. These kids got it easy, man.
They got it easy, man. You know, it wasn't like us. You know, we had to walk a mile.
I know,
right? That was just to get a mile closer to school.
And we had no calculators, man. Yeah.
We didn't, dude. We had to tally things up on the desk.
Our fingers and our toes.
Yeah, dude. And then now all these kids have optional homework now. Do your kids have that?
Well, in Cy Fair, they have almost no homework. In junior high or even elementary.
dude, you know, school wasn't done whenever we were dismissed from school. We had more shit to do when we got home. Yeah. And if you didn't do it, you know, you got bad grades, you know, and man, now yeah, kids, it's, you know, once you're done with school, woo, you're done. Yeah.
It's like, it's not fair.
It's not. They should have the same shitty situations we had to deal with.
That's right. Damn it.
Damn it.
But, yeah, but you know, it's, I guess it's okay. I don't know.
I guess, you know, I may, it's like, there was this comedy, well, I wouldn't say comedy sketch, Bill Burr, was on Conan one time. He was talking about how dads are now, you know, now dads are like, you know, he's like, oh, whenever I was growing up, there wasn't all these kids running around saying, dad, dad. He's like, oh shit, dad, you know, oh my God, you know, it's like, don't, you know, watch what you're doing. You know, he's like, and so Conan's like, oh, you know, why are you so upset that these kids are having it better now? And he's like, I remember whenever I was a kid, my brother wouldn't eat his dinner. My dad took a glass of milk and threw it in his face. threw milk at his face. Right. Just, yeah. But, you know, so it's, I guess it's in our nature just to mess with the younger generation that they've got it a little bit easier. You know,
that's true.
Yeah, you can find so much stuff, you know, maybe we are a little bit, jealous that we didn't have it that way and it's too little too late. But, so, you know, maybe we're just like, man, you know what? It was character building. You know, you're missing out on character building. You know,
that's right.
Should figure out how to do, you know, math, you know, with just a sheet of grid paper. And that's
right. That's right. It builds, I like that. It builds character. And so I, and that's another thing, you know, leading into getting the show going, you know, we had to get up and put in a VHS tape or a DVD or change the channel. Now, man, everything is streaming. You know, it's like, I'm still a physical guy. I still have a lot of Blu-rays. I still will put Blu-rays in that aren't streaming sometimes just for pure quality too. Cause I do think it plays better and looks better straight off the Blu-ray than it does sometimes off the streaming. I've still been exploring Tubi a lot the last couple mm-hmm. weeks. And, man, I think it's a great free app and, I've been watching, there's no way to say this without sounding like I'm a total pervert, but, I've been watching a lot of anime on there, and there's a show I've been watching called Aika, and it's a pure fan service anime, which is actually not, it's not a terrible story. I mean, she's like she's hired to help these people investigate, the world is all kind of covered, like 90% of its ocean in the future. But what I can say is it's like, when I say it's fan service, it's mega amounts. I mean, there's more panties in this show than you'll see in any show. I mean, just the way the camera angles are and the shots. I'm like, oh, let's see how many panties and butts we can show. And there's tons of them. And there's the occasional nudity, but it's not all sexual. It's mostly done for play and laughs or part of the story. And yes, I know that sounds cliche. Oh, it's part of the story. It actually really is most of the time. Yeah. And I've been watching that on Tubi and it's like seven episodes and there's a three episode prequel and I don't know. I've actually enjoyed it. And yeah, maybe it's a little perverted to watch that stuff, but you know what? God dang it. I'm a single man. I can watch those kind of things.
That's right, dude.
You know? And I've been enjoying watching that on Tubi, man. I like it. I watched some of that and I watched, what was I watching the other day? Oh, I rewatched Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And you know, I'm having a hard time understanding the hatred for that film, man. I just don't get it. I think it's one of those legacy sequels that people's expectations were, oh, this is going to be Raiders of the Lost Ark Last Crusade level. And it's just simply not, but it's not a bad movie. I actually I kind of enjoy it really. I mean, the CGI ants are kind of like, okay, you know, because everything was practical back in the early day and the scene where Mutt swings with the monkeys, I hear people complain about that, but the scene lasts like 3 minutes. It's hardly even a major part of the film, you know? It's fine. I was watching the other day and I like it, man. You know, maybe the alien thing is a little stranger than some of the other stuff, but how's it any stranger than an Ark of the Covenant that dissolves people into nothingness? You know, yeah. I mean, or a guy who can rip people's hearts out. That's what blows my mind when I hear people complain about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Why is Alien so bizarre compared to what happened in the other Indiana Jones films? You know, it's like, it's cool, yeah. You know?
No, yeah, yeah. I don't think I had an issue with it. It's definitely different than going the more like historical route,
right.
You know, but it's, you know, I watched an Indiana Jones movie this week. It was Raiders of the Lost Ark because my youngest two haven't seen an Indiana Jones movie. And I was like, they've got to see all the Nazis' faces melting off.
Well, I watched that one also this week, but I just specifically was thinking about Crystal Skull because of the hate it gets.
It gets a lot of hate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Spielberg direct it?
Spielberg directed it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. I think I've watched it in the past couple months, I want to say, but I don't have any issues with it. I don't even have any issues with Shia LaBeouf, you know?
Yeah, he's fine. He does his part role. Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand the, you know, and it seems like there's already this negativeness towards Dial of Destiny before it even comes out because people are trying to say, well, the last one wasn't what we wanted to be. It's like, give it a chance, you know? I'm very much looking forward to Dial of Destiny. You know, I can't wait. So, yeah, I watched that this week, man. I really like it, man. I think it's fun. You know, I enjoy it. Don't have any real hatred towards it, man. It is what it is. You know, it's just a movie, man. And, you know, I like it.
It's theater, baby.
Yeah, you know, exactly. You know? I'm trying to think if there's anything else I really checked out this past week. I just don't feel like I watched a whole lot of other things. I was just kind of, like I said, cruising the anime. Watched some old... Have you ever watched the original G.I. Joe miniseries, like the Introducer show? It's on Tubi also, like the first five episodes. And it's weird, man, because like Cobra Commander, instead of talking with like the Megatron like high-pitched voice, he talks like a snake. He hisses and stuff in those first few episodes. It's weird.
Oh, wow.
And I forgot he did that, and I was watching some of those. But you know, those early episodes are actually pretty well-written, and then the show kind of becomes like any of those toy-based shows, just kind of become silly and the stories aren't as good as they go. Because, you know, a lot of those cartoons from the 80s, we watch them out of pure nostalgic, like Transformers I love and Mask and G.I. Joe, but they're not as good as people really think they are. Some of those stories are pretty bad. They're pretty poorly animated at times. I think Transformers is arguably the best. I think G.I. Joe is pretty good, but like, go watch some of those early He-Mans. They're pretty horrible. There's some really bad stories in there, you know. But they were designed to sell toys. That's what they made them for. You know, those IPs were not made to do anything but get your mom and dad to take you to the toy store and buy a He-Man figure or a G.I. Joe figure. And it worked. Remarkably well.
Big time. I mean, enough to pay for a movie.
Yeah, obviously, go watch The Toys That Made Us. There's an episode for all three of those products. He-Man, G.I. Joe, and Transformers showed the success they had with the based on cartoons to sell them, you know, so it worked to that extent. But man, I'm going to keep exploring the Tubi app and keep self-promoting it to people, man. If you're just looking for a great app that's free and you're tired of all the junk on Netflix and paying for it, man, download Tubi. There's a lot of great free shit on it, man. Mm-hmm. I'm thoroughly enjoying that app so far. I mean, if you're a Godzilla fan, there's a lot of Godzilla movies on there. Our other co-host Long, he would love it, man. Tons of Godzilla movies on that app. So, you know,
I may have to check it out because it's like I don't have a whole lot of Godzilla films at my disposal. I borrowed them from Long and watched them. You know, they've got that Shin Ultraman movie out. And I was like, oh, you know, it makes me feel nostalgic for Godzilla movies where they would sing to Godzilla, and there was like
HBO Max still has a lot of Godzilla movies on it too, but the Tubi app has a lot as well. You know,
I always watch Rocky IV sometime at some point during the year, and I was looking for some inspiration to work out, and I was like yes, this is it.
Did you ever watch that director's cut they put out last year?
Yeah, but it don't have much to it.
I read that they touted as this big time director's cut and everything, and they said like the edits and changes are so minor unless you really know the film real well, you don't even notice them.
You know? Yeah, That's I think I found a little snippet of where they have like the director's cut edits, and you know, whenever around the time it came out, and it didn't seem like it was much added to the story. Yeah. So I've got Rocky IV. So
I think part of it too is it was designed to come out when Creed II came out. I mean, Stallone had started talking about working on the director's cut of Rocky IV. And I think it was supposed to kind of be a promotional tie-in to go with Creed 2 and Drago's Son, all that. So when it didn't come out on time and the director's cut got delayed, I think it lost its steam and no one really cared. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, because it's, you know, who's, you're not going to, you know, unless you're a genre fan, you'll be interested in
right. And
that kind of stuff. But it's really going to push if you could get it out the same time as Creed 2.
And not only get it out, but they put it out for you to buy. It went digital on Vudu accounts and Amazon and all that. And people, if you're going to release a director's cut for a movie that's 30 years old, put it out for free. Throw it on HBO Max, just like they did with free. Justice League Snyder's cut.
Extra put $5 for bonus feature.
People, you know. Put it out there for people to watch. Don't ask people to pay for a movie that they've already seen 100 times in the last 30 years, you know?
So, oh, yeah. Nah, man. That and they're still got this $5 deal going on, plus a Friday the 13th deal for $13.99. So 8 movies, $13.99 if you're interested in owning the whole Friday the 13th saga. one of the movies they had on there was a 2022 movie that I did not get to see. That's the Spirit Halloween movie. And I was interested. Now it's very much it's almost like a kind of like if you saw the Fear Street, the R.L. Stine Fear Street movie that came out. Mm-hmm. It's kind of geared towards teens, like you know, that young teenager age kid. I didn't enjoy it too much versus like you know, if you were to watch like another horror film, just, you know, Freddy or a Jason film, you know, it's very different, very juvenile, very teen. Not bad for the $5. You know, I'm probably not going to watch it.
I don't know. You sound like you have a lot of regret in your voice. Like, I spent $5 in the trash.
Yeah, it's not trash. It's just... You know, I was hoping to at least get like a kind of like a Trick or Treat kind of movie. I don't know if you've ever seen Trick or Treat, where Trick or Treat's not the best horror movie out there, but it's like one of those guilty pleasure ones. There's elements in it where you're like, man, you know what? I may watch that again. This one, I felt like I didn't get that. There is some regret there, but you know, it's $5. You know, so not too bad. And to rent, it was like $3.99. So I was like, why not?
Well, yeah, they do that sometimes.
Yeah. There's other stuff on there too. And I didn't download it and watch it, but I wanted to watch Devotion. You know, I feel like we get a lot of war movies, but they're always the Korean. I mean, they're always the Vietnam War, World War II, World War I. And we never get one or even Revolutionary War. We never get like the Korean War. In fact, I don't believe there's been a Korean War movie made since like the late 1950s or 1960s.
Seems like there's gotta have been something by then.
I maybe didn't do enough looking into it, but last one I saw, I think it was like in black and white, but Devotion. I don't know if you've seen the.
I saw some about it, but to me, it looked like one of those Bible thumper type movies.
Yeah, so. It looks like it's not so much focused on the Korean War.
Yeah.
It's focused on one or two men's journey, and if it was like a wider scope, I'd be more apt to just buy it. Mm. But you know, they don't even have it for theater at home or to rent. It's only to buy. And I can't own something like that for $20 that,
right.
Yeah. You know, I don't hear, there's not a whole lot of buzz going on about it. It's rated well, but yeah. I think I'm going to wait to rent
it. We're fixing to talk a Spielberg film today and I really want to see his new movie, The Fablemans, but at the same time, I'm not going to pay $20 to rent it or $25 to own it until after I've watched it. So I'm hoping The Fablemans goes for cheaper rent soon, you know? And because I do want to see that. And But yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I played a bunch of my oldest. He was like, oh, you haven't played Battlefront 2 in a while. And you know what? I'm like, yeah, let's play a stormtrooper and shoot some stuff up. You know, why not?
Yeah. Oh, well, mine get mad at me if I shoot them and beat them. Well, you're not supposed to do that. I'm like, what do you mean not supposed to destroy you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm supposed to let them win? I was like, that's not how this works.
Heck no.
I've been wielding the power of the Force and shooting Star Wars shit since you weren't even a thought in my mind. So
that's right.
Don't mess with me when it comes with Star Wars games.
Since before you were the size of a womp rat, baby.
That's right. You weren't even a drop in my balls yet. But on that note, let's talk some news, man. I know this is a movie that you're looking forward to more than me, because I'll probably see it. I don't know if I'll see it in theaters, but I will see it. They announced that Dungeons and Dragons is going to open up the South by Southwest Film Festival. And South by Southwest is known for doing this. You know, they show some art house films and things like that, but they're known for sometimes taking a pop culture film and having it open the festival, like they did a few years ago with Ready Player One. Another Spielberg film. Spielberg keeps popping up in today's episode. And Ready Player One opened up, you know, South by Southwest and premiered there a few years ago, and it was a huge success. It got word of mouth out for the movie, and so I think they're doing that, hoping that it gets word of mouth out for Dungeons and Dragons as well. And if people don't know, South by Southwest is a huge music and art festival. It takes place right here in Texas in Austin. I've never been to it. I've drove through it. I've been downtown Austin before when it's going on and drove through masses of people. In fact, 2 years ago, I drove by the theater where they have the movies at, and they were premiering the Woody Harrelson, Kevin Costner, Bonnie and Clyde movie, which I still haven't seen. I need to watch that because I love Costner.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched it yet. It's on Netflix. I've tried like twice to watch it, and then I've never been able to sit down and completely watch it. And it was on the marquee, and it was cool, and there were people standing in line waiting to get in. And I imagine that Costner and Harrelson were probably there somewhere at the premiere of the movie. So that's kind of my little South by Southwest claim. But I am familiar with what it is. Being a Texan, it's a big deal here, man. You know, it's a huge festival, and it's grown bigger every year. So pretty cool they're going to premiere Dungeons & Dragons there, huh?
No, yeah. I'm very much excited to watch that movie. I think it's going to be – absolutely going to be better than the first one.
Oh yeah,
the first one that came out with Marlon Wayans. Yeah, definitely some wasted potential there.
Yeah,
but you know, Jeremy Irons was good in the movie. I think he, you know, but people like that, actors like that, they always shine through.
Right, they do their thing.
You know,
I'll see it. I mean, it should be good. And apparently, there's already plans for a television show in the works too, a spinoff from it. I can't remember if it's Amazon or who's going to have it, but they are planning a Dungeons & Dragons television show as well. So
nice.
But you know, this is a ripe IP that's been around for many years, and you know, it's people are still playing the game. In fact, COVID has allowed Dungeons & Dragons games to make a comeback. People doing it over Zoom calls and things like that, playing games.
Oh yeah.
The Stranger Things, the success of that show, which has Dungeons & Dragons in it. And it had an animated series back in the day. It's had action figures. So it's definitely a property that has its following, and it deserves to have a good film made. So hopefully the Chris Pine film that's coming out is that answer. And we shall see here in a couple months when it hits. Before that movie comes out, though, we have the beginning of Phase 5 in the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Ant-Man and Wasp: Quantumania. And it got its final trailer this week. And this is the first trailer that I saw that really has me more excited for the film. We get to definitely see a better look at what Kang is up to in this trailer. Some interesting special effects shots, multiple Scott Langs in the trailer, which makes you wonder how this deals with the multiverse and the timelines. And my one thought with this trailer was, I hope they fucking kill Ant-Man and just leave Kang standing over his dead body, and that's how the movie ends. And you're like, holy shit, what's going to happen next? I mean, is that wrong for me to think that? Because that,
dude,
the Marvel Universe Phase 4 sucked. Let's just be honest. You know, Spider-Man No Way Home was great. That was fucking awesome. You know?
Yeah.
But Doctor Strange was okay.
Solid.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Thor sucked. Black Panther was good, but it really had nothing to do. The problem with Black Panther is it's a beautiful tribute to Chadwick Boseman, but that's all it was. It didn't really do anything to help Phase 4 other than introduce Namor. So it's time to move this shit forward. And what better way to move it forward than Kane to come in and fuck shit up, you know, and say, this is what's up. And that's what I hope they do. I mean, I hate
and we
I
get MODOK.
Yeah, the MODOK appearance. I want this to end on a somber note. As like, here I am. I'm badder than Thanos. I killed this motherfucker. Let's roll. You know, and Jonathan Majors, I think, is going to kill it as Kang. I really do. He looks awesome. So yeah, man. Let's go. Let's bring it on Phase 5. You know, and then we got Guardians coming out. Then the Marvels later this year. So yeah. We'll see where they go with it.
Yeah, there's time to come back from, you know, from the not so hot, you know, movies that have come out.
And then, and of course, Loki season 2 is coming out, which, you know, we know Kang was introduced in Loki season 1. And, man, I didn't realize that, man, Kihei Kwan, who, of course, played Short Round in Indiana Jones, is in Loki season 2. Man, I texted you along the other day, man, I'm really enjoying his comeback, man, from Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's just because his smile is contagious. His enthusiasm is contagious. And it's you can't help, if you grew up watching Indiana Jones, you can't help but be really enjoying this, man. You know?
Yeah.
It's awesome to see his comeback and winning the awards for the movie. And he's just in such awe of where he's come from and how it's turning out for him. And he seems like celebrities sometimes come across as, you know, they're fake as fuck, right? But he comes across as like really humbled and really legitimately appreciating what's going on in his life, and it's so much fun to watch.
And I think a lot of other people notice it too. You see, whenever he was accepting his award, the other celebrities are just super happy for him. Mm-hmm. But it's I don't know where he's been. You know, this past couple decades. Well, you know, he did Temple of Doom, and then he did like what, Encino Man.
Yeah, but he also then, some of that. I'll be honest. Don't let his speech completely fool you that he didn't know if he'd ever be successful again. He did choose the route he chose. He chose to work in the background of Hollywood and raise a family, things like that. So some of those were his choices. And then he started trying to get back in the business a few years ago. He did a couple of small roles I saw and a couple of some voice work and stuff, but no real success until the Daniels gave him a chance in this movie. And it's fantastic. And I hope he goes out and gets the fucking Oscar too, man. And same with Michelle Yeoh. You know, I think the movie is going to be looks like maybe a long shot for to win Best Picture, but hopefully it can take home some awards because it's deservingly so. It's a fantastic film. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And, I know. So, but I'm enjoying his comeback. More. And we're going to stick with Indiana Jones news just a little bit, man. You know, Hasbro has the rights, you know, to the Indiana Jones figures. And, you know, and this is something I want to bring into the show a little bit more. You know, we used to talk about toys and things that would tie into the movies and not necessarily today's movie, but talk about collecting sometimes. And, you know, and Indiana Jones has never been highly successful in the collector's market. You know, they had figures back in the 80s, which are now very hard to find because there are even some of them are even rarer than Star Wars figures because there was only a few made and they didn't do real successful. Temple of Doom had a few figures, but again, not super successful. Then in 2008, when Kingdom of Crystal Skull came out, they had Indiana Jones figures on the shelves again, a little more success this time, but even still not super successful. And some of those were being figures only 14 years old are starting to be worth some money because they weren't bought. People let them sit on the shelf. So Hasbro's doing it again, this time with Black Series style figures with Indiana Jones. And they had a stream this week where they announced the first couple of waves for that are coming out. And they've got some Target exclusives and a Walmart exclusive Indiana Jones. And they're really highly detailed sculpted 6-inch figures. And they're going to do a retro line too, based on the old figures. And so it's an exciting time for Indiana Jones fans. They are doing a club. There's people that don't know this, that the club at the beginning of Temple of Doom is called Club Obi-Wan. And so they're doing a Target exclusive Indiana Jones in his suit from Club Obi-Wan. And I pre-ordered that figure already because I was like, because if you know anything about Target, you never find the exclusives on the shelf ever. They never make it to the shelf because the employees or whoever, the scalpers buy them up first. So I pre-ordered it hoping that they fill my pre-order on that figure. But be excited, man. If you're a collector, Indiana Jones figures are going to start hitting the shelves here around April is the planned date for the release. So Hasbro making a comeback with the Indiana Jones figures. You know, I kind of forgot this movie was being made, man. You know, they're making a Borderlands movie and it's directed by Eli Roth.
I could have sworn they had started this a while.
Yeah, it's apparently in post-production, but there's some reshoots coming up. The problem is Eli Roth has moved on to another project, but his buddy Tim Miller is going to step in, do the reshoots for him. This is not a situation like with Rogue One where they had fired not fired, but they asked Gareth Edwards to step aside and Tony Gilroy came in and finished the film. This is more a mutual thing. Eli just like, I can't do it. Tim, can you do it? And Tim Miller, of course, directed the first Deadpool film. But Eli Roth apparently is going to be trying to zoom in and work with him on the reshoot. So this is more of a mutual thing. I don't know if this movie's coming out this year. I would imagine maybe it's coming out this year if it's almost done shooting. But I kind of forgot about this movie. And Borderlands is a super popular video game series. Has a lot of fans. I played a little bit of the first game. I'm not as drawn into it as everyone else, but I can see the appeal of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun. You know, to me, I found it really hard and I kept getting pissed off at it. I'm like, fuck this game. You know?
Yeah. Frank tried to get me to borrow his Xbox 360 copy to play on my Xbox One at the time. And I don't know. I couldn't get into it as much.
See, he did the same thing. He tried to get me into it back in the day and I couldn't get into it. And one day on a PlayStation sale, they had it for like $9. I was like, you know what? I'll buy it and try it. And I played it some.
Yeah.
It's also really ultra violent and lots of bad language and stuff. So it's not something I can always play with the little ones in the room. You know, but yeah, so the Borderlands movie is still on the way. And, last bit of news I have, man, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is starting to go into full pre-production. Super excited about this movie as I love the series. And they just cast William H. Macy in a part. And people know who William H. Macy is from Fargo. He's been around for years, good character actor. So looking forward to this movie, man. I really like the trilogy they did with Rise and War and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And this is going to continue that story only several years later. And if anybody knows how the last trilogy ended, and this is spoilers because, I mean, the movie's been out for years. And, you know, I think we're past spoilers. But, you know, of course, Caesar dies at the end of it and he leaves his son and his family. And but imagine that Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is going to be about his son. I mean, I think that's the route they're going to go.
And, yeah.
Big fan of that series. Going back to the 1960s movies and even the new ones, I love that series. So looking forward to it. And,
yeah, no, all the newer films have been really good. bring on another. Why not?
Yeah, we've done a couple of the originals on the show. We've done Rise of the Planet of the Apes on the show. And, you know, I think as it gets closer to the new one coming out, I'm sure we'll do more. I'd like to do some more of the 1960 ones on the shows too. So we'll have to get to it.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that would be – well, no, that's the last one we did. So it's Escape from Planet of the Apes is next.
So, yep, the time – is that the time travel one?
Where they go to – they go where they go back to when Earth and humans,
Yeah.
But that'll be next, so, you know. All right, well, I guess that brings us to the featured film of the week. A movie that I didn't realize was 20 years old. Last year. And because I've only seen this a couple of times. I want to say I saw this in theaters. I'm pretty sure I did. And then I probably watched it one other time afterwards. And directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks and Christopher Walken. And based on a true story that's a very interesting true story. And that is, it is Catch Me If You Can from 2002. And, Matt, I'm going to let you summarize 2 weeks in a row, only because I'm going to run real quick and grab a bottle of water while you summarize.
Go for it, man. Got to hydrate. So we, you know, we have this story about Frank Abagnale Jr., a boy who learns at an early age how to con people with some influence from his dad. It paints a home life that, you know, his mom and his dad met during the war, World War II presumptively. And, his dad kind of got into some trouble with the IRS and, you know, they have to move away from their nice home and they're struggling a little bit. And, you know, Frank Abagnale Jr. starts writing, you know, bad checks, and then starts, obtaining a guise as a pilot for Pan Am and, you know, making fake payroll checks with Pan Am and just starts making checks. He gets better and better at his craft. And, you know, the FBI is, you know, putting him in the spotlight, and they're led by Tom Hanks, but it's Attaway or Haggerty or man, I can't remember the his character's last name. It's eluding me. But anyways, Tom Hanks, he's on his heels and he's on his heels and, you know, eventually leads him to France, where, you know, Leo's character, Frank Abagnale, is caught and brought back home, where the FBI eventually uses him to help catch other criminals that are using bank fraud and check fraud.
Even to this day,
yeah. You know, and he's an interesting character. Obviously, yeah. The movie, you know, exaggerates a little bit, like to your point last week. But it's a great story. You know, Steven Spielberg bought the rights as soon as this book hit the market, mm-hmm. as soon as the real Frank Abagnale, you know, published the book. Steven Spielberg bought the rights.
Well, yeah, as early as 1982, 81. Yeah, yeah. He was trying to make the movie. Yeah. Oh, and he did it, and then he got so busy that he wasn't going to direct it, but it kind of came back around to him. He ended up directing it. Let's talk about the truthiness of this a little bit before we get too much of the film. When this came out, the real Frank helped consult in the film. And he wanted it to be as authentic as possible, regardless of some changes. Like Hanratty is a mix of a couple of detectives. That character is actually made up for the film. But he said, according to him at the time, most of this stuff was really how it played out. He said the only changes were for dramatic purposes was he said, I would not have called the detective on Christmas Eve. He goes, I'm not stupid. Why would I want him to know where I am? So that was added for the film. But in the 20 years since, Frank has written a couple of other books, along with public records and stuff, that have started to debunk a lot of the things he did. And he's even kind of grinned at it. Now, he did write these checks. He did forge. He did all that really happen.
But using making the stuff from the model planes, he did that.
Yeah. But he really, it's kind of been debunked that he wasn't really a Pan Am flight attendant for 6 years. You know, he might have done it for maybe a couple of months, but didn't quite go as long as he made it out to be.
Basically, he was trying to cash these bigger checks, and he figured he's 16 years old, and even though he's passing as an older person, because you got to know, he's 175 pounds at this point and 6'5". So he's very believable as an adult. He figured they would cash a check from a pilot versus, you know, a snotty little kid. And that's how it started.
Yeah. Public records have gone on to show that he never worked in a hospital, even though he claimed he did, you know. So some of the things were a little – he exaggerated his own stories. Because, you know, you think about it, in the 60s, he probably could do that and get away with it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's like they said in the movie – you know, he could write a check in New York for a bank in San Francisco, and it took him 3 weeks to figure out the check was fraud. You know, where now, man, it's instant. You know, they're going to know if you're fake. So interesting time that this movie, that Frank chose to do these things. And so there is some embellishment based on in the film, but as most true stories are. But it still doesn't make for a super exciting, interesting story. You know, Spielberg shoots this film a little bit different than some of his other movies, almost documentary-like at times, the way he shoots this. A lot of low lighting. I was reading, too, a lot of that was the cinematographer's choices, not so much Spielberg choices, that they chose to go with wet-looking streets and more darker lighting to give it more of a documentary-type feel. But it works for the film. And the cast is excellent. I mean, DiCaprio has been making just hella good films for, you know, 20 years now. He's a really good actor, and he's good in this.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks came into this role at the last minute because Spielberg didn't want to ask him because he thought he wouldn't take on a supporting role. And Hanks was like, no, a good story is a good story. I want to do this movie. And he had just a few days to prep for it, and he came up with the accent. And he met with the real detective who had the accent, and Hanks does a hell of a good job too. I mean, as he always does in everything he does. And I think that's what I really like about this movie is it's two of our best actors of the last two decades.
Yeah.
Going at it with each other. And it makes for a good film.
It really does. And, you know, it's funny that the closest thing to the real story is the pilot thing. You know, he was actually arrested in Georgia under suspicion, but he was able to convince the police that he was not, you know, Frank Abagnale. He actually befriended enough pilots and airport personnel to where they vouched for him that he was not this person. And so he was, he did have that going on for him.
Yeah.
It's just amazing some of the stuff he was able to do. He claims that he would have been able to steal more than $5 million. Mm-hmm. But I don't think so. With today's technology, he claims he could have spent he could have stolen 25 times more than that.
Right.
Just amazing how he would obtain the tools and stuff to actually make these checks, look as real as possible. Mm-hmm. And he just kept getting better and better. He did try and get married, but whenever he told the girl his true story, it didn't go over very well. That ended. It wasn't exactly how it happened in the movie.
Right.
It's a mix, just like the detective. It's about three different women that he kind of had his eye on.
Young Amy Adams in this, almost didn't recognize her.
Yeah. And especially with the braces. You've also got Elizabeth Banks in this movie. She's the teller. The
bank teller, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have I just know her as Grey's Anatomy. You have the Grey from Dr. Grey from Grey's Anatomy in the movie too, and Garner.
Garner came on set for one day to film her scenes. Yeah,
yeah, and she's got the hooker scene.
Because she was busy. I think at the time, Alias was a thing. Was it a thing back in 2002? So I think she came to set for one day, took a break from Alias to film her scene. Yeah,
yeah. And the it's funny, the scene on the whenever he's trying to get the James Bond suit.
Yes.
They're like, okay, Mr. Fleming. And I'm like, oh, that's obvious. He's trying to remake
of the actual suit. And what's cool is he said he watched movies to study how these people acted. He was a big movie guy and he had a photographic memory. He could remember everything. They said even to this day, he's still like that. It's kind of interesting that DiCaprio, now these movies are almost 20 years apart. He had no idea back in 2002 that he was going to be playing Jordan Belfort years later. He plays these characters that are criminals, essentially. Frank Abagnale, then in Jordan Belfort. And Jordan Belfort did the same thing, weaseled people out of millions of dollars in stocks and bonds. And they went to jail too. And then they both get out of jail, even these real life characters, and they still make millions. Frank Abagnale still makes millions as a consultant for the FBI and other banks and things that hire him to make sure their checks are secure. He makes millions of dollars every year. Jordan Belfort now makes millions of dollars every year as a public speaker and a motivational speaker that universities and people hire him and stock companies of what not to do or what to do. That's crazy. These guys go to jail for stealing millions of dollars. They always serve, I think, Frank only served a couple of years and he got out.
Yeah.
I think the movie made it sound like a shorter time. I think I read he did serve about 2.5 years. And Jordan Belfort only served 3 years out of his 20-year sentence and he got out. So just go steal a bunch of fucking money, get out of jail.
If you're really good at it.
Yeah, you're really good at it. You can still get rich.
Yeah. Man. Jeez. Yeah. It's such a cool story, and I've always liked this movie. It's a movie that if I see that it's on, I'm going to watch it. Yeah. It's just you got a lot of great rapport, between Leo and Hanks. And, one of the things that was true that he plays in there that wasn't it's a play on the truth, and they really didn't touch on it much, is that he did the last – thing, job that he kind of falsified was a professor for a university, and he got the job, and but they kind of allude to it in the beginning whenever he impersonates a school teacher.
Right.
So that's how they kind of get away with that. He did become a assistant attorney general, prosecutor in the assistant attorney general's office. But he wasn't there for long because he said he was from Harvard. And then there was another prosecutor there that was actually a Harvard alumni that was kind of pressing him on these hard questions, and he knew he just couldn't keep it up. So he left and was able to falsify some more documents to make it look like he had the credentials to be a professor.
So,
yeah, he was able to falsify a lot of documents, man. Biggest white collar crime of his time, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because Spielberg originally wanted Johnny Depp for this movie, but Depp was unable to do it. And it's another one of those films that, like, DiCaprio is so good in this that I don't think I'd want to see anyone else in the role. James Gandolfini was originally going to play Carl, but due to scheduling issues and stuff, he had to, with The Sopranos, had to back off. And because this movie got delayed because DiCaprio had to finish reshoots on Gangs of New York.
Okay.
So Catch Me If You Can got pushed back a little bit, which caused Gandolfini have to go back to The Sopranos, which allowed for them to hire Tom Hanks in this role. And then we didn't even talk about Christopher Walken, who plays his father. Now there is some embellishment in that too. They made it, and this, I could see why they did this for dramatic purposes, to give Frank's character inspiration. And he gets it from his father, but the real Frank Sr. was not a con artist like his son. He was just a pretty much a straight, normal guy who went to work every day and tried to raise his family.
He did get in trouble with the IRS, and he did end up losing his business and becoming a postal worker working for the government, but not as depicted in the movie where his, you know, dad's like, oh, well, you know, he hardly talked to his dad. He ran away from home. You know?
Right. Yeah. He didn't have quite the relationship he had with his parents that they made the movie appear. And in fact, he really did have very little to do with his mother, cause he was pretty upset with her that she cheated on his dad and left him. And so he wasn't real happy about that. He had a little bit better relationship with his father, but not quite the relationship he had in the movie, you know. Apparently he did write letters to his dad, but he's not sure if his dad ever got them or wrote back, you know? So, you know, he did a try. But Walken is good in the movie too. You know, he's one of those actors that anytime he's on screen, he's going to bring 100%, and do his job too. And I always, Walken's a guy, I kind of like Walken in these, kind of toned down parts, if that makes sense. You know, we're used to him playing kind of a, not so much a villain, but a pretty powerful alpha character in most of the movies he's in. And I kind of like to see Christopher Walken play sometimes these lower key parts because he's really good at them.
Yeah, no, he's definitely got a, you know, a range that he doesn't show a whole lot. And, you know, we know him, you know, I only know him from, you know, I know him mainly from like Sleepy Hollow. And you know,
Pulp Fiction, True Romance,
Pulp Fiction, True Romance, you know? So it's like, that's the movies I think about when you say, you know, Christopher Walken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in some other interesting fact, Tom Hanks, this was Tom Hanks in his prime. He was on a roll, like seventh straight movie that made $100 million at the box office. Spielberg, known for working with John Williams, another John Williams score in this movie, as he's done many times. And did you see that John Williams this week announced he's not retiring? He's like, man,
really?
At first he said Indiana Jones is going to be his last film, but now he's like, you know, thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to retire. He's saying he didn't confirm he's doing any other projects, but he's like, he's not officially retiring. You know, he says, I'm still having too much fun at almost 90 years old.
Okay.
You know, there you go. You know,
but, yeah, man. Keep
definitely
on doing
one of
it.
Our greats of all time. Of course, Martin Sheen appears in this movie too. Him and Leo worked together on The Departed a couple years later. One of my favorite movies. So a lot of good actors in this movie. One of our best directors of all time directing it. It's amazing to think that Spielberg was he loved the project, but he really didn't want to direct it because he wasn't sure if he could do it justice. And he, even though he loved the book for years, and he was really trying to get it, someone else to direct it, and Gore Verbinski almost directed it, but then he had to back out. And so finally Spielberg was like, you know what, I'll direct the movie. Wow. And I'm glad he did, you know, because it doesn't feel like a typical Spielberg film. I don't know. That's why I kept going back to it as I'm watching this. It's like, it's Spielberg, but it's not like the Spielberg that.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain that. You have to be a hardcore Spielberg fan to understand that, what that mean by that.
It's underrated Spielberg.
Yes. You know? Maybe that's a good way to put it.
It's not his best movie, but it's definitely a Spielberg movie, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's a movie worth watching. It's a movie worth owning in your collection. And it's a movie you probably watch a couple times per year.
Yeah.
I mean, he did a solid job with it.
Oh, he did.
I didn't have an issue with it.
No, it starts off maybe a little slow at the beginning, but once, once you establish Frank and his family life and the characters, and once he leaves home and starts doing his thing, the movie just snaps and it flows.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the only beef I have with is those first maybe 20 minutes. You know, it's a little clunky. And I'm looking at, like, man, this movie is 2 hours and 20 minutes long. And the first half hour makes it feel long. I feel like maybe there could have been some stuff cut back a little bit on that and just focused on Frank's story. Because once you get past that first half hour, the movie's great. So I think that's probably my only beef with it. Takes a bit to get going, but certainly a very entertaining film, well acted, well directed, a very cool story, whether it's true or not. Excuse me. That's a whole nother thing, but you know, you can enjoy it for what it is. And it's funny to watch back. My biggest thing is, like, man, Leo hasn't changed much. He looks almost the same 20 years later. That guy seems ageless.
He really does.
You know, he's just one. He really has become one of our great actors. And it's funny because you'll hear people, you'll have conversations with people, and they're like, "Oh man, I don't like Leonardo." I'm like, "How do you not like Leonardo DiCaprio? What did he do to you? The guy just keeps making good films. He's a really good actor, and he's been doing it since he was." He was maybe 20. I think he was 24 when he made this. I mean, think about that. I think he's maybe a little bit older than that. I think he's like 47, 48 now. And this was 20 years ago.
He looks like such a kid in the movie. Yeah,
he has a young look to him, and he always has. And he's just been doing his thing for years now, going all the way back to What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I mean, the guy can just act. He can act his ass off. And I enjoy most of his work, you know, and that's what's good about it. But Catch Me If You Can, it was on Paramount Plus, and because I started watching it last weekend, and they must have taken it off. I don't know, but thankfully, Matt, you had it on your Vudu account, because I have it on DVD, but some of my DVDs are packed in boxes, so I would have had to dig it out somewhere, because I know I have this movie on DVD. But it's cool. It worked out. Watched it and enjoyed the heck out of it. Even it took me a couple of days to watch it. That's just how my movie going is sometimes. I'll watch 45 minutes here, 45 minutes there, you know?
Yeah. Eventually you finish it.
But I think this movie's a pretty solid, I give it a pretty solid A, you know, I think it's
same
a good
here.
Film.
You know, it's an A.
Tells a good story and it's well done. Next week I have another movie not directed by Spielberg, but directed by J.J. Abrams. And we kind of have there's always a lot of, if you've been listening to the show a long time, there's always a lot of little running jokes in the show, whether it be Mark not liking comedies or telling Tom Cruise jokes and stuff. So we're going to do a Tom Cruise movie next week we're going to start a mini trilogy of, it's kind of came about by accident, but somewhat on purpose of, the next three movies we're doing are all the third parts of sagas or trilogies or what have you. So next week we're going to talk the J.J. Abrams directed Mission Impossible 3.
Who are you? You have a wife, girlfriend? Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her. I'm gonna hurt her. And then I'm gonna kill you right in front of her.
We've covered the first two, which we strangely did out of order. We did two, then we did one. So we're getting back in order now with three.
Now we're set.
Yeah. And, you know, the seventh one is coming out this summer. And this is a franchise that has consistently gotten better and better and better as the movies go along. And I have enjoyed the heck out of the Mission Impossible films. I really have. They've become one of my favorite franchises. Very much looking forward to Dead Reckoning this summer. That's high up on my list along with Indiana Jones to go see. I can't wait to see it. But we're going to talk Mission Impossible 3 next week, starring Tom Cruise and the late great Philip Seymour Hoffman is the villain in this movie, and he's a heck of a good villain in it. Some good sequences in this film too, man, as always are in the Mission Impossible films.
Mm-hmm.
And these movies are on Paramount Plus. I know that since they're owned by Paramount. If you want to stream along with us at home, I mean, I've got them all on Blu-ray, but I know they're all on Paramount Plus too.
I don't own them all yet, but one day I hope to.
I have them all on Blu-ray. I don't have them all digitally, but I do have them all. I do have copies of all of them. But you've seen this one. You've seen them all, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen them all. And I think three is pretty good. It's definitely up there. I know the newer ones are you know, highly favored, but I think the third one is where it starts to get really good.
Yeah, the third one is really good. And then fourth, you know, it's the first one I think was written by McQuarrie, but directed by Brad Bird. And then the fifth one is when he brings in McQuarrie to direct, and five and six were fantastic. And seven's looking to be just as fucking awesome when it comes out. So, so that's next week on the show, man. We will talk Mission Impossible 3. We're not going to reveal the other two movies in our little mini threequel trilogy yet, but we will as the next couple weeks go by. And so Mission Impossible 3 on next week's show. And until then, man, the RebelRadioPodcast.com. That's where you can find all your Rebel Radio needs. As always, we're on all apps, Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes. And if you listen to us on iTunes or on your iPhone on the podcast app, man, take a couple minutes to leave us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate that.
Yes,
it helps
please.
Us out with our algorithms and things like that. So it always helps. And until then, man, just continue to stay safe. Have a good week. And we thank you as always for listening. And this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And until next time, remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.